Good evening, everybody. Stefan Molyneux, not feeling so new. I had some Indian food, and I'm afraid it entered my system sideways and is currently doing pretty much to my innards what Milton is doing both to the Florida Peninsula and the building of the movie Office Space. So I think I'll make it through the stream. Help me make it through the stream. Hey, I might actually have a stream on the stream. Well, that's probably more than you need to know. All right, so let's get to your questions and comments. It is all about you. Yes, you, giant thumb of philosophy, is here for you. All right. Are you still working on hat instructions? I'm so sorry. My bad. Absolutely. I'll do that right after the show. Have you ever considered a truth about or a deep dive on American folk heroes like David Crockett or folk heroes in general? Is there any benefit to teaching your children about folk heroes? No. You don't want to make morals larger than life. One of the, minor issues that I would have with regards to Christianity is the old Jesus is perfect, I'm not. So you don't want to make morals around superheroes, the sort of larger than life, Paul Bunyan strides canyons with a single step and so on, right? What was it? I remember there was some song about a Wild West hero. He's like, he's so tough, he doesn't shave. He just hammers his bristles in and bites them off from the inside. So you don't want to make courage fantastical. You know, courage is the little, tiny, difficult things in the midst of everyday conversations. Now, courage is not a grand gesture, as, you know, the male urge to say, all right, you guys go on ahead, I'm going to cover your retreat, it might cost me my life, you know, that sort of self-sacrificial stuff. That's not courage. What do they always say? They say courage is a lack of self-interest in service of the rulers. Go take that Hacksaw Ridge, you 19-year-old, fresh-faced, apple-cheeked piece of cannon fodder. Courage is when you are willing to lay down your life for the pompous bureaucrats who run the planet. That's not courage. That's high-stake slavery. That's very efficient slavery. And that's what I was taught. I was taught that courage was fighting against the evils during the Battle of Britain. And it's like, well, how's England doing these days? How's England doing these days? Courage is all the little conversations you have with the people around you on a daily basis. That's courage. These big, grand superhero gestures, I threw the Hulk against a building. It's like, that's not courage, right? Because it doesn't actually apply in your life. Like, somebody was talking about how the left generally wins because they're more committed. And it's like, well, no, the left wins because they are focused solely on extracting resources through propaganda and the coercion that propaganda covers up, whereas the right is trying to live their lives and raise children. It's like saying a stalker is committed. Well, yes, because whoever he's stalking, like, didn't Reese Witherspoon or someone, Sandra Bullock had a stalker who ended up in her house, right? Sandra Bullock's trying to live a life, raise her kids, make movies, and the stalker is just monofocused, right? So they were saying, you know, like on Wikipedia, right, there are people who put thousands and thousands and thousands of hours volunteering, apparently. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But they put thousands of hours into editing Wikipedia to serve the leftist narratives. Because everything is a conspiracy theory until it's a good idea everyone agreed with all along. And I have a philosophy show to run. I have friendships to maintain. I love spending time with my wife. I have a daughter to raise. I'm a busy guy. I think you can see from my output, and I don't just roll out of bed and do shows. I roll out of bed, scratch, and then do a show. It's totally different. But I'm a busy guy, so I don't have time for thousands and thousands of hours of Wikipedia editing. This is one of the reasons why giving people jobs and families keeps them out of trouble. It stops them from becoming obsessive ideology turbo dorks who vampirically drain all the truth out of society because of their own motivated incel mischief impulses. And I tried to, I really did try to give this gift to libertarians with the against me argument, right? To say, yes, you should be committed. And if statism is coercion, then those in your life who very much want you to be thrown in jail for disagreeing with them, call them out on it. Call them out on their support of violence. Call them out, especially if they're Christians in status, call them out on thou shalt not steal. Nope, they didn't want to do it. And I understand, so that's where the real courage is, right? That is where the real courage is. Those little, powerful, everyday conversations, that is what moves things, right? So forget the slow march through the institutions, which is, I mean, already completed by the left. The slow march through families and friendships, that's what the right needs to do, but they won't, right? Because the right views the left as misguided, and the left, in general, views the right as evil. So the most consistent position with the highest stakes will always win. So you got to raise the stakes for people who support the use of violence. Raise the stakes for people who support the use of violence. Otherwise, they'll win, and you'll probably go to a gulag. All right. Have you seen the film What Women Want with Mel Gibson? If so, what did you think? I did. I remember seeing that with an old girlfriend many moons ago. The only thing I really remember was that he made a fellatio joke in a boardroom, and he did a cool dance with a hat. I don't really remember much else about it. Because Mel Gibson is a great actor in many ways. I think the first half of the movie Hamlet, which has an incredible cast. My gosh, what a cast is in Mel Gibson's Hamlet. The first half of Hamlet, the first two-thirds of Hamlet, is about as great as a movie can be. The last bit, he gets all kinds of goofy and silly and does his shtick and so on. But nobody knows how to do the last part of Hamlet anyway, so. Let's see here. Good evening. How delighted would you be for an unrealized capital gains tax? I mean, that would be it for the economy, right? That would be it for the economy. It'd be like the Danish government. Thank you, Tony. He says, the solo content has been fantastic. So you hate the live stream? Is that what you're telling me? No, thank you. I appreciate that. So the Danish government tried to raise a capital gains tax and rich people just fled the country. They ended up over $400 million in the hole. I mean, it's amazing. They just keep learning the same lessons over and over again. Because people who want to dominate others are not free themselves, and they keep forgetting that other people are free. An unrealized capital gains tax, I mean, you could even hit people with the rise in value of their houses and tax them on that. So, I mean, that of course, they'd say, no, it's just for a few people, you know, the way that income tax was just for the top 2% of people and never expanded beyond that. So, I don't know, like, I'm 50-50. I honestly don't care either way. I fundamentally don't care either way. Because that would simply end this mutant economy that we've got, and hopefully would build something better. So. All right. Doesn't everyone enjoy when headlines make predictions that we know must be true? Politician X will likely do this. Or not. Well. All right. What is the opposing economic theory to Keynesian economics in 10 words or less? Counterfeiting is immoral, thou shalt not steal. There you go. Last stream I attended, you did a last minute pitch for donations and it wasn't quick enough before it ended. So here are the remaining locals coins I have. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Should I lie on my resume? I imagine you have to be... You have to be competitive when others so often do. Yeah, you know, I don't, when I was a hiring manager, I didn't particularly care about resumes. I didn't particularly, I mean, I had an intelligence test that I gave to applicants. I mean, I tried resumes. It was really random. I tried going just with hobbyists, like people, because I was a hobbyist computer guy who then became a chief technical officer. But eventually I just gave a test. I just devised a test of smarts and gave that. And that solved all my problems with regards to hiring. I think Google does the same thing, right? The Google just gives you a bunch of challenging questions. All right. A dream analysis from your friend. Blah, blah, blah. There's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. Well, I mean, obviously, you know this. All government programs are temporary because the government expands until the economy collapses, right? And at some point, people will get tired of the cycle. At some point, people will get tired of the cycle and start looking at non-violent solutions to complex social problems. At some point, all we can do is put the word out and document the decline. But at some point, people will be like, I'm actually kind of tired of this stupid repetition of wealth leading to tyranny, leading to collapse, leading to the dark ages, leading to wealth, leading to tyranny, leading to collapse, leading to the dark ages. At some point, people will go, damn, maybe violence doesn't work. It's just a thought. Maybe violence achieves the opposite of its stated goal. Maybe, just maybe, violence achieves the opposite of its stated goal. Maybe FEMA won't help you unless you're in the Middle East or Ukraine. All right. Somebody says, thank you for the tip. This is a request from a friend who has been having a recurring dream. Not a friend that, a friend who. He says, I'm standing in a large gray car park with several other people looking at a large, rusty, dark blue steel stage-like object. It feels like a boat. The others are related to the owner. They talk as though they are familiar. Things like I can introduce you to him. We will call him to meet. The owner is never involved. I look underneath the object, which has been repaired, and it's coated in a hot, dripping black tar substance. So I think this is to do with parental scapegoating. I don't know what a steel stage-like object is. That a typo for a cage-like object? Please, if it is, check your... Whether it's a stage-like object or a cage-like object is kind of important, and I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. I'm just going to wait for just a second here. And... yeah, so somebody, was it Cassandra Fairbanks, now McDonald, I think she posted on X a clip from a rather appalling, creepy old Elvis movie where he was half seducing what looked like a 9-year-old girl and being desperate to take her home and offering to make her a star. It's like, whoa, God, hiding in plain sight. Oh, stage as in platform. Okay, got it. So let's see here. The reason I'm saying that, so a tar substance, to tar and feather, is when somebody has done something wrong, they are publicly shamed and tarred and feathered, right? So a large gray car park with several other people looking at a large, rusty, dark blue steel stage-like object. So being up on stage reminds me of being up in a courtroom or being examined and so on. It feels like a boat. The others are related to the owner. They talk as though they are familiar, right? So this would be a family. They're related, right? Things like, I can introduce you to him, we will call him to meet. So the owner of the stage wherein you are tried is the patriarch, the matriarch, it's the parents, maybe the grandparents, and so on. The owner is never involved. So that probably means that there's a parent or parents who have turned family members against a scapegoat, maybe somebody who's criticizing them or who has issues with the family as a whole, and is... rousing other family members to condemn the family member who's stepping out of line. That would be my guess. All right. But he's welcome to call. freedomain.com/call. Why do companies have such unrealistic job requirements? A high percentage require experience that almost or literally nobody has except people who already have that job, e.g. proprietary software that only employees can access. Yeah. So, I mean, a friend of mine many years ago wanted to get a job in the States, and he got the job, but it had to be the case that they had to continue advertising because he wasn't American. They had to continue advertising for other people to get the job. So all they did was they make the job so specific to his skills that they could plausibly deny everybody else. It's decades and decades ago, right? So in this case, they probably want to give the job to a friend, a family member, or something like that. And so they make the job insanely specific so that they can hand it to whoever they want and still claim that they had advertised the job, so it doesn't look quite as much like nepotism. Call-in AI does amazing dream analysis for your information. Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. Maybe we should, you know, actually, James, make a note of that. Maybe I think we have one more AI that we can summon, so to speak. So maybe what we should do is load all the dream analyses into an AI. All right, let's see here. Blasted locals does not want to play in the background. Are you saying you have something other than something else to do than to look at the giant speckled ostrich egg of truth? I don't follow. I don't understand. Let's see here. I saw this question posed as determining whether someone should be committed to a mental ward. There is a bathtub. It is full of water. You have a spoon and a bucket. What is the fastest way to drain the tub? So says the interviewee. So if they chose the spoon and not the bucket, they should be committed? No. And then the doctor puts the interviewee in the ward. Would that question be a good test of logical problem solving for a job interview? I'm sorry, maybe I'm not getting this. There's a bathtub, it is full of water, you have a spoon and a bucket. What is the fastest way to drain the tub? Is this do you use a spoon to pry out the plug? Is that right? You use a spoon to pry out the plug so that you drain it that way? So says the interviewee. So if they chose the spoon and not the bucket, should they be committed? No, and then the doctor puts the interviewee in the ward. Would that question be a good test of logical? The answer is pull the plug. Yeah, because it says drain, right? It says drain. Well, I don't know that technically it's the fastest way at all. The fastest way to drain the tub is to use the bucket to take the water out and then pull the plug when the bucket no longer works. That would be by far the fastest way to do it. So it is not the correct answer to say to pull the plug, right? I mean, I knew that the plug was involved because I said maybe the plug was jammed or something like that. Use a spoon to, have you ever had that where you have a plug? I have one of these, actually I just replaced it, but I have one of these bathtubs stoppers that's like the plug is, plug, you pull the plug out and then bail. Yeah, for sure. But I have one of these sort of cracked, half broken things. So No, and you're right. Even faster than, you're right and I'm not right. Or you're more right than I am because I said the fastest way would be to use the bucket. Oh, no, I would be right. No, I'm so sorry. Well, for a moment, I thought it was wrong. Oh, my God, I felt dizzy. Who am I? But no, because the time you spend pulling the plug, you could actually use to drain it, right? And I guess at the end there, you could just let it run out at the end. But even the 5 seconds you'd spend getting the plug out, you could get another big scoop of water out, right? So the fastest way to do it would be to bail like crazy with the bucket and then pull the plug at the end. That's sort of what I said at the beginning. Sorry. Yeah. So Albert Camus' answer would be bathtubs are absurd. Use a spoon to commit suicide. Hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you. Don't forget, of course, to support the show, freedomain.com/donate. Well, without resorting to high explosives. Well, I wouldn't say that high explosives would be draining the tub exactly. That would be destroying the tub. All right. This is, I just had a long call-in today. Very good call-in. It's one of the call-ins where I've done multiple, it's one of the few call-ins where I've done multiple role plays. I did a role play with the mother, his mother, and then I did a role play with his wife because he was in a sexless marriage. And it was driving him crazy, as these things tend to be, right? And they're sort of talking about lazy modern women, right? Sort of lazy modern women. Hey, Steve, nice to have you here. Nice to have you. Lazy modern women. So we were talking about his wife. And so there is a post on X from Billy Pratt at Kill to Party. And he says, a hero emerges. And this is A-I-T-A-H, am I the asshole? He said, the post is, update, I cut my wife off from our finances because she wouldn't stop ordering takeout. What do they call it? Takeaway in England, right? It seems very literal. He says, 9 days ago, I made a post about how my unemployed wife had spent $1,176 on delivery apps in just a month. This is egregiously outside of what we can afford to spend on takeout. And since she didn't seem willing to stop, I canceled our credit card and moved the money from our joint account into my own. For the next few days, my wife kept talking about how I was financially abusing her. She threw several tantrums despite being apparently severely malnourished. Threatened divorce, threw a bunch of the food we had in the fridge away to try and strong arm me into letting her get takeout, and even tried to guess my bank account password a bunch of times. I'm sorry, my password isn't Taco Bell 123. The last one was how I learned, if you try to guess someone's bank account password enough times, the bank will send an automated email. apparently there's been an update. But last Friday, the complaints and threats stopped. She seemed mostly back to normal. I figured she'd given up. That was until today, which was garbage day. When I took the last bag out before taking the bin down to the curb, I discovered half a dozen fast food bags and other takeout containers in it. My wife wasn't supposed to have access to money. I had no idea how she was affording the food. I confronted her about it. And first, she denied everything. I had to bring all her fast food garbage in to get her to fess up. She had taken out a loan. Now I thought that she had borrowed money from a friend or family member, but she had taken out one of those predatory payday loans. Before you ask, no, I have no idea how she was approved. Within the next hour, I froze my credit. I then drove her to the payday loan place where I paid the loan off in cash. I will now have to dip further into my savings to pay the rent. I suppose, in a certain way, cutting her off was successful. She didn't order takeout anymore. She just drove to the restaurants to pick up her food for the low, low price of $20 for every $100 she borrowed, or $60 in fees in total. In addition, I told her we would be getting divorced. So yeah, my marriage is over. I don't even know what alimony laws in my state are like, but I assume she'll happily live in a cardboard box under a bridge if Uber Eats will bring her food there. Wow. So this woman took out, there's some comments. So this woman took out a payday loan to buy Mickey D's. Wow. God, I hope she doesn't lose half. I hope he doesn't lose half his shit over this she monster. See, I got to tell you, I in general will assume that these things are fifth generation warfare. So when you see a story that's this extreme and this insane, I would assume that it is put there by the enemies of the West to drive down the birth rate. I don't think it's, I mean, it could be real. What do I know, right? But my first assumption with this kind of stuff is it's so ridiculous and so egregious that I simply assume it is sabotage of male-female relations in order to drive down the birth rate of the West. I mean, it's just too crazy. That's too crazy. And of course, you know, sort of the laziness of modern women is kind of something. Okay, let me ask you this. How many women, 40 years and under, do you know who can really cook? I don't just mean like assemble something based on the instructions of something they printed out, like, you know, the iPad cooking where you're scrolling and measuring. Like a woman who can cook, she's got, you know, at least 20 or 30 recipes. She can, knows the ingredients, can do it blindfolded. And how many women do you know who can mix and match? Oh, here's a bunch of ingredients. I know what I can make from this. Here's what we have still in the fridge. I know. Like a woman who can really, really cook. How many women? My wife can really cook. She's really good. And she bakes too, but I've had to beg her to stop because it's not just the dough that rises, it's my ass that expands. Yeah, isn't that wild? Just my wife. She's a total whiz. That's it though, right? Yeah. Yeah. And my wife is very thoughtful because she's a vegetarian, and but she's learned how to cook a good steak, so. Somebody, so what do we got here? 0001, my wife, 3, 1. Yeah, it's low, right? It's low. The monetization of female sexuality has been about as catastrophic a thing as humanly possible to the female work ethic. I'll say it again. The monetization of female sexuality has been about as catastrophic a thing as can happen to the female work ethic. It's absolutely catastrophic. Because when women can stretch out the dating bullshit forever and ever, amen, they get used to being courted and wooed, the princess treatment. Like they get used to courted and wooed, and he's got to bring flowers, and he's got to treat you like a goddess. And it's like, no! That's all chivalric nonsense to get you pregnant and replenish the planet. it has created a form of paralysis, half psychosis in a lot of Western women. A lot of Western women. And this is the fantasy lists, right? And this is why women get used for sex as someone. They don't offer cooking, children, pleasant company, or anything else. Right. Some of these videos of working moms making pasta dishes as quickly as possible are horrifying. Yeah. Open a box or a tin, you failed in the kitchen. My wife is, you know, I won't say she's obsessed. And I really, you know, I massively praise and appreciate her for this. But she's like, everything from scratch, nothing in a tin, nothing in a box. I want wholesome, healthy, fresh ingredients. She'll drive to get them. And I mean, I don't know, when my daughter was younger, occasionally we'd have the, you know, the white cheddar Kraft dinner from a box. That was sort of really rare. But we try, and this is mostly on her, and it's really good. I try to eat nothing that is prepackaged, or very little, right? But dating was supposed to be a preview to get you to watch the boring movie called Life, Marriage, and Children, right? But now everybody just wants to keep dating and keep dating and keep dating. And dating without marriage is a form of parasitism because it's demanding a man resources, and what do you give in return? The process of viewing sex as a gift from women to men has really been one of the most successful psyops in human history. The idea that a woman is sacrificing something or providing something of value by having sex with a man is absolutely, completely, and totally laughable. Beyond laughable. It's completely crazy. Oh, so let me get this straight. Your big chore is an orgasm. Wow, talk about taking one for the team. That's amazing, impressive, deep, phantasmagorical, wonderful. So men have the draft and you have a G-spot. What? Heroic female 101. Can you imagine? Well, I'll have sex with you if you do more chores. It's like, oh, so I have to do laundry, dishes, vacuuming, and carpet beating. and you get an orgasm. And these things completely weigh, they completely weigh out. Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, the Mr. Beast Lunchly stuff. That's just monstrous. I mean, these guys are purveyors of quasi biochemical warfare, in my ridiculous and humble opinion.
Oh my gosh.
I like cooking and learning to bake. Did not have countertops or a table in the pass through that was a kitchen for 15 years. Oof, that's rough. Women refuse their men's sex. My God, it's not like men are asking you to work in a coal mine. Well, I mean, I view a low sex drive as indication of either fairly catastrophic depression or, you know, the something that a doctor should check out, like hormone levels and various blood measurement levels and so on. Like, that's, I mean, I get that there are just some people who seem to be born with a low sex drive. But, yeah, this idea that you know, sex is work, and that a man needs to make sacrifices in order to get access to sex, that the man needs to work for sex and so on. It's like, good Lord. Can you imagine being paid to have orgasms? Let's see here. Attractive female, late 40s, good conversationalist, nice figure. Owns her home. Okay, why is she single? Find out she's a third wave feminist. Shile that explains that. I don't know what that means. Yeah, it's funny. I remember it wasn't too long ago. My daughter and my wife went away. Now, if you're a married guy, well, you don't get a lot of me time as a whole. When I'm not interacting with my family, and that's wonderful, that's great, right? I'm not complaining about it. It's not like some chore. But when I'm not interacting with my family, what am I doing? I'm working on philosophy. I have binary state, right? Interact with family, philosophy, and some sleep. So my daughter and my wife went away for a couple of days, right? And I'm like, holy crap, is it ever easy to vanish? You can despawn like that in society. Thank you for the tip. I'll get to your question. So, I don't know if you've ever known. So, I guess I'm 58 years old, right? So, I'm not sort of in my young, hot, youthful, super riz charisma stage, right? And I just realized, like, I wake up, empty house. I mean, we know our neighbors and all of that. We're on very good terms with our neighbors. But I can just see how you can just vanish. You can just go to the back rooms, man. You can go to the nether, like, very easily in life. I'm not talking me, like your family and friends and all of that. But I really got a sense, like, sort of padding around. It's like, I can really imagine that you can end up in a situation in life where nobody cares about you, really. And it's not that people are careless or they just don't care. It's like, whew, you can just go off the radar, vanish in the woods, go deep, go wide, go gone, right? It's an amazing thing. It's sort of the second, I remember many, many years ago when I first made some money in the software field, I broke up with my very long-term girlfriend, the woman I proposed to and was engaged to and then bailed, thankfully, at the last minute. But I moved out and I moved into an apartment building just downtown Toronto. I was a room. I had two gay guys as my roommates because gay guys make the best roommates in many ways. And it was in an apartment building which had a nice pool. And I remember swimming in the pool one night and thinking, this ain't it, man. Like, let's say in some magical alternate universe, I get wealthy enough to build a big old house with a giant pool. But swimming here alone kind of sucks. So this is why, you know, I really want to remind you, I want to urge you, please, please, my friends, cement your connections. Bind people to you with benevolence, kindness, charity, generosity, and hoops of mutual obligatory steel. And I saw myself in that pool, and I remember thinking, well, I'd be too wealthy to take care of my own pool in this alternate universe, so some guy would come and take care of my pool, and I'd hang out and try and chat with him. Hey, you want to go for a swim? Oh, God. Oh, it's heartbreaking. Oh, it's like the people who linger with the cashiers and ask about how they're doing and what's new, and they don't care about the lineup because they're isolated. Oh, those lonely older women who go with mostly phantasmagorical complaints to their doctor just to have someone who check them with a cold stethoscope and listen to them for 30 seconds. Oof. Oof, I say. Oof and a half. Do you know, I mean, maybe you are someone like this. Do you know people like this? People who, they just kind of go. You know, maybe they're the people at the edge of family dinners or something like that. It is easy to despawn from society. If you don't build the necessary connections, usually when you're young, it's very easy. Because this is what church is about, community is about, charity is about. That if you're not of use to people, if your presence doesn't make people's lives better and happier overall, if you're not of use to people, you disappear. Eventually, you disappear. And you can still be there at work, and you can get a little bit of social contact at work, and then everyone scatters. Somebody says, I've heard the story, some single elderly man no one knew, he died until the store he orders dinner once a week from. Notice he went 2 weeks without ordering. Driver goes up to check on him. Driver saw his body on the floor. And who knows? I have this odd cautionary thought. I'm absolutely sure it's not true. But let me spread it with you, because it is kind of terrifying, so why should I keep this internal horror movie just to myself? So you know how there is this belief in Christianity, probably in other religions too, but this belief in Christianity that you die and your soul floats up to the pearly gates, and St. Peter or some angel, some archangel, opens up the book of your life and goes through. Albert Brooks has a movie called Defending Your Life, which goes along these lines. Not a very good movie, though. But what if, as you're dying, you live another life? What if, as you're dying, as your brain fades to the static of empty nothingness, what if time slows down for you? Time is subjective. We all know what it's like when you're having a lot of fun. Time flies, and then if you're stuck in some functions and relations class in grade 13 when you're 18 and want to go conquer the world like Napoleon, how slow time goes. So time is relative in our subjective experience. It's not relative in its objective experience, I guess, unless you're going near the speed of light, or the speed of thought, as I call it. But what if, as you're dying, time slows until it almost stops? And every decision, good and bad, that you made is revealed to you in the paroxysm static of your brain emptying itself to low energy nothingness. What if your conscience steps you back slowly over time and shows you every step you took in the right and wrong directions? Christmas Carol style. What if Ebenezer Scrooge is dying, and this is what happens when you die? And people who come back from this come up with the story of St. Peter and going over, like, what if this actually happens when you're dying? Your life gets played as a slow motion documentary. All the missed opportunities, all the courage and cowardice, all of the right and wrong decisions, all of the backing away from the necessary in pursuit of the frivolous, what if it all gets unpacked, unraveled, laid out before you? All the lessons you didn't learn that too late are revealed to you, all of the knowledge that you ignored, all of the courage that you backed away from, and the good that you did. All of the pettiness that kept you alone. All of the judginess that kept you solitary. All of the stiff Kleenexes instead of actual children that you pursued. All of the greedy eating instead of the happy sharing of food. All of the using of others for sense benefit rather than virtuous ennoblement. All the little things you stole and all the things you gave. What if the myth or the story of St. Peter and the giant book of your life and the account of your existence, what if that is what happens when you die and time slows and almost stops? And if you die at 70, you live in half motion for 140 years looking at every decision you made before you wink out. And there's a great rushing noise towards the end. And maybe this would be a good novel. But you live twice your life in the dying of it. And there is no avoiding the actual truth of your existence, because so many people live this existence lying to themselves, lying to everything to do with themselves. I did a call in today with a guy who could not find the red flag in his courtship of his now wife, the sexless marriage. And then I finally realized, with goosebump prickles on my spine, sometimes I get these insights, it's like an ice sword being sheathed in the scabbard of my spine. Body chills. Oh, the reason we're not finding the red flags in her is you are the red flag. You are the red flag. You lied to her. Because he only went for her for looks, not virtue. But he pretended he loved her and liked her. So he was the red flag. That's why we couldn't find it. It's like trying to find the murderer in the crowd when the murderer is you in your heart. And the reason I say this is this guy who had contributed so little and given so little to society that nobody cared whether he lived or died. And he was able to avoid that. The avoidance of bad decisions is foundational to their continuance. The avoidance of the knowledge of bad decisions, blaming others, blaming circumstances, blaming the environment, history, inevitability, human nature, female nature, blah, 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 blah. Self-justifications. What if all the self-justifications get utterly stripped from you? And you are the bare-forked animal. You are naked in the blinding light of no more lies for twice your life as you fall to the fucking ground.
Ooh.
What if that sense of eternity that people perceive after we die is that glimpse of what happens when time slows to almost stopping? And because you're about to die, the devil takes the scales from your eyes completely. All the soft tones are removed from the butchery of your history. And you see yourself and the good and the bad with no delusions and no illusions and no soft scissoring and fogging of ideology. All the glories and pettinesses of your life are stripped from you because The reason we lie to ourselves is to survive tomorrow. But when there is no tomorrow at all, you're falling to your death in a council flat. There's no tomorrow. There's no need to lie anymore. And what if, as you fall, not even bothering to brace yourself because there's nothing left to protect and you won't be getting up again? What if that fall takes 100 years? You know, like dreams do this. We know it's subjective. Have you ever had those nights where you dream so much you feel like you lived 6 months? I've had dreams which go on for months at night. We all do. You know, those dreams. I'm in university. I've taken some course. I can't remember quite where it is. I haven't been for a while. I've been playing hacky sack and chasing girls, and I should really. I mean, when I was in grade 8, I was put in a grade 13 writing class, and I was given a list of books to read over the summer. I didn't read them because they were shit. The only one I read was Jack Kerouac's On the Road, because I was like 12 or 13 years old, and the books were just word vomit hippie bullshit. And I knew I needed to read them. Another time, my brother and I went to the Outer Hebrides for the Young Adventurers Club. And we spent our whole time, because the weather was so bad, sleeping, leaned up against the grimy, sweaty panes of rain-lashed bus shelters in the middle of fucking nowhere. And I was supposed to write up the story of that entire trip, and I just dodged it forever and ever and on. And so you have these dreams where you've got an obligation that you don't agree with, that you just kind of dodge and smidge and avoid. And those dreams, it feels like it's months. I feel like I've lived vampire years in the length of some of my dreams. What if that's death, man? What if? Since there's no value in lying, and there's nothing to save your delusions for, the entire truth of your life is revealed with agonizing slowness. And you look at that girl you didn't approach, and knowing, see, when you don't approach the girl, you forget about her. There's some girl you really like, you don't talk to her, you kind of shy away, you avoid her, because you don't want to get rejected. And you go back, and then you end up alone, because you just, every time you feed your cowardice gets stronger, and your courage gets weaker. So you see those little decisions that lead to a life of sheer isolation and loneliness. And when you make those decisions, you don't know that it's going to do that. But at the end of your life, you rewind, start again, and you're like, fuck. Fuck, this is when it happened. God damn it. And you see yourself slowly turning away, knowing that you are turning to a corridor of 60 years of sheer isolation. Seeing that moment, desperate to stop it. Can't rewind. You're dying. You're falling to the ground. There's no purpose to lies anymore. You won't cushion yourself with your hands because it doesn't matter. You're dying. And you won't cushion yourself with lies because it doesn't matter. It's just one V difference. You have nothing to lie for. You have nothing to live for. Just insert that V. You're not going to live. You might as well no longer lie. And what if there's a rewind in every little fork in the road that you took that led you to a better or worse place is replayed in slowness, and you know the map, you know the whole map. It's like if you got lost. You know, when I was in my, I don't know, it's maybe 14. I won't get into the whole story, I talked about it before, but I went hiking in Algonquin with two of my friends, and we took all of our camping gear. We were going to be gone for like half a week or something like that. And we had one guy, actually had Crohn's disease. He decided not to use his water purification tablets, so he got really, really sick and was throwing up, and we didn't have cell phone, no satellite service, nothing back then. So we split up, and we were heading back. My friend went as fast as he could to call his parents to come pick us up. I took all of the food and the tents and everything. It was kind of moving along like some Shetland pony with Andre the Giant squatting on its back. And then my friend just kind of went as best he could, staggering from tree to tree. And I took a wrong turn. I didn't know I'd taken a wrong turn. I thought I was taking a right turn. I had a map, but, you know, I'm not. This is before I worked up north, so I was not wood smart in the way that I became later. So I'm hiking and I'm hiking. And this family comes down the path towards me. Now, of course, my first question was, does this lead to X? I wanted to ask them, but then I didn't. I didn't ask them because I thought, well, if I'm going the wrong direction, I have to turn around and walk with them for 8 hours. And I can't walk with people I don't even know for 8 hours. That's going to be awkward as hell. So I just said, hey, and I kept going. And then as night was falling, I came to a you are here sign and I basically was in the Arctic. I saw giant dinosaur tracks with slightly shaking water in them. So I had to tie up the food to the tree and sleep all night. Well, barely sleep all night. And then I had to hike 16 hours straight to get out of there with 80-pound backpack. It was quite a trip, let me tell you. So when you die, what if you go back to that time where you take the wrong direction? Now, I took the wrong direction thinking it was the right direction, but what if when you're dying, you go back and it's the wrong direction and you know it? You don't find out later like you do later on in life. And if you turn away from the girl that you like, and then you turn away from the next girl, then you turn away from the girl that you like, you don't put yourself out there, you don't make yourself useful, you don't become charming, you guard your heart until it fucking dies of solitude. And you go back when you're dying, knowing that that's what led you to the isolation that has you dying alone. To be eaten by pets until the stink alerts your neighbors. And then all your shit gets thrown out. Ooh, remember all those pictures I took of the sunset in Cuba? Oh, but it all gets thrown out. Nobody wants your old photos. Nobody knows who's in them. Nobody cares. Gone. Gone. All the books you outlined and highlighted and your things you learned and just all gets thrown out. It's all gone. I could have had that. Instead, I got nothing. And you know, in a way that you don't know in your life, you know when you're making those decisions, as you die, you know when you're making those decisions that this is fucking you completely. Completely. Oof, I say. Now, I'm not saying this is true. But it could be true. Could be true. And I live like it is a little way, I think. I live like it is a little way. I think you end up with a better life if you believe all the lies will be stripped from you and all the results of every daily decision will be laid clear to you at the end, that there is a judgment. It's just right before you die, it feels like it goes on forever. And there's nothing you can do about any of it. That you fall into an endless hole called no excuses, no lies, absolute, straight fucking facts. It's a little terrifying. But thank you for the story. I knew a 50-something-year-old woman at a church I used to go to, someone says. Her and I started chatting. Once she realized I was intently listening, she rambled on nonstop, switched topics for 30-plus minutes. When I go to leave, she'd latch on even harder. Yeah. It is terrifying. The clamp, like this woman in Thunder Bay I talked about a couple of weeks ago when I worked up north, and she just dragged me in to listen to the records she and her husband used to listen to 50 years ago. And it's risky. It's risky to touch the desperate hearts of the lonely, right? I mean, we're in Eleanor Rigby territory, right? It is risky to touch the hearts of the terminally lonely. Because then, they wait for you. They need you. You are oxygen to them. If you go too long without contact, you need contact contact so much that you drive it away by reaching for it. People's lives flash before their eyes when they have near-death experiences. Yeah, something like that, but I don't think it's a flash. Your life flashes in front of your eyes, but the flash is at 1600 FPS and played in slow motion. Yeah, I think so. I've never read What Dreams May Come, although I found the movie terrifying. Life review plays in reverse, but with perfect recall and no ability to lie to ourselves about what we did and what we thought. The only consolation is no one else is watching. This is only for you. No, because if somebody else, that's part of the horror. If somebody else was watching, you would have lived better. You will have such a fine conscience in death, Steph. What a gift to others, too. Well, thank you. I certainly aim for that as best I can. Oh, the girl, somebody says, oh, the girl I was talking to online asked for money. Holes in her story. I left my feelings in chat nicely. Left my need for answers, no word, in a couple of days. Looks like they were not who I hoped. The girl, right? All right, so let me thank you for your tip. Bill, dear Steph, I hope this message finds you well. I've been reflecting on the concept of identity and what it means to truly be a person, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on a question. Imagine we have the ability to extract a person's brain and place it into another body, an empty body, free of its own consciousness. Would this individual still be the same person I knew before the transplantation? In my view, I would argue not entirely, because part of how I recognize and relate to someone is through their appearance, voice, and the way they move, the sensory and physical characteristics that my brain associates with their identity. So while the personality might remain unchanged, the external cues that define my perception of them would alter. It seems to create tension between physicality and identity. Would they still have the same right to be considered the same person, or has something essential been lost or transformed? What? Why is this completely impossible scenario that will never occur in your life? Why is that important to you? That's what I need to understand first and foremost. Why would this be important to you? I'm sure there's a good reason, but you know, we're kind of in a moral crisis in the world, right? We're kind of in a moral crisis in the world. And why would medical scenarios that don't exist and don't matter, why would that be important to you? That's what I'd like to understand. All right, let me just go. I want to check comments. Oh, just while you're waiting for that to come back, I'm going to go check comments over in Rumble. Good evening. Thank you for what you do. My husband and I have been together for 8 years, married for 6. We have 3 kids. We are homeschooling, a homestead, and we peaceful parent. We've been using your... We didn't quite get to the end of that. But I'm lovely to hear. Fantastic. Congratulations. That is a beautiful statement. I really do appreciate that. This is motivating me to get a girlfriend. Yes, that's right. Because your conscience, the kicker of the story is you don't have to wait to die. Your conscience is doing this anyway. You can just choose to listen to it or not. Your conscience, you don't have to die. Your conscience is doing this every day, and it tries to tell you in your dreams. But your conscience wants to give you free will, because if you don't choose virtue, it's not. All it can do is give good counsel or warnings or signs or fears or feelings or desires. Your conscience can only give you guidance. It cannot force your will. Conscience can only woo you. It will not rape you. Your conscience is always right there, ready to go. It's not ready to go. Your conscience is always going. The long life flashes in front of your eyes reminds me of the Gandalf fight with the big demon in Lord of the Rings, fighting while falling down into what seems like a near endless abyss. It could be like that for someone with a particularly bad conscience. Right. But that's a Christ wrestling with the demon and being reborn, right? Gandalf the White is Jesus reborn. Gandalf is largely a Jesus figure because he does precious little magic. I mean, I know Jesus did his miracles, which is a kind of magic, but Gandalf uses his language, right, when he's fighting with the ogres, right? He uses his language to trick them into staying until the sunlight turns them to stone, right? So Gandalf is a counselor with a little bit of magic, just as Jesus was a moral counselor with a little bit of magic, so. All right. How do you know if you should be grateful for what you have or do an entire bottoms-up change? For example, being free of Big Pharma means I'd have to start from ground zero and risk being sent to a group home if I fail, whereas right now I at least live without direct micromanagement. The possible benefits, though, are huge if you can make it without direct government interference. I'm sorry, but that sounds like medical advice, being free of Big Pharma. Obviously, you know this. I can't give you any medical advice. I'm trying to tell my relatives that their keepsakes that they want me to have are worth nothing to me. Well, it's worse than nothing, isn't it? It's worse than nothing. Because it's an inconvenience. It's an inconvenience to want these things. Yeah, my mother will always be like, oh, I'm keeping this for you. It's like, I don't want it. Didn't matter. Didn't matter. Well, my mother was always trying to contribute anything to my life except virtue, which got kind of tiring after a while, as you can imagine. As you can imagine. Somebody says that sounds regarding the identity issues. That sounds like an issue we would need to deal with in 50 to 100 years. Right now, we would like to ensure the forces wanting to drive us back to the 9th century don't win. Well, no, but the problem is it's the 9th century with 21st century technology. So, like, if you're in debt in China now, they're piloting this program that somebody has worn through their smartphone if they're standing near you, if you happen to be in debt. Can you imagine? That you're walking around in town and everybody's cell phone around you goes, bigot, if you've been marked with negative social score or whatever. Homophobe, right? Yeah, it's just a way of keeping people out of society based upon horrendous technology. There's this girl I knew in college that I'd like to reconnect with via Facebook. So we'll be upfront and ask if she wants to meet up for coffee or lunch. Dark ages with cell phones, you said in 2012, I believe. Yeah, I think that's right. Shoot your shot, because time shoots you anyway. Well, Gandalf is friends with hobbits, and Jesus said that the young and the children are his best companions, right? Well, so it's an automatic torture device, right? The sort of social credit score where you get ostracism based upon government technology, it's a way of isolating and torturing you. It makes everyone into a torturer because, I mean, as you know, human beings respond to ostracism with the same pain centers that they respond to torture with, right? So ostracism is a form of torture, which is why deplatforming is a form of torture. And so the social credit score and you're in a store. Can you imagine you're in a store and you want to pay for something and then up it flashes that you've been termed a wrong thinker by the powers that be? And will they want to serve you? Will they want to have anything to do with you? Or they'll just be cold and unfriendly? I mean, it's a grave danger. It's a grave danger for sure. I have not found the Intro to Conscience. I spent a little while looking for it the other day. I have not found the Intro to Conscience presentation. I will either find it or I'll do it again. Do it again now. Maybe they'll charge you double the price. Maybe. But as we can see from Joker 2, they'd be perfectly willing to destroy tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars just to punish those, right? Because Joker 2 is a humiliation ritual because the wrong people liked the first one. So they get tortured with the second one. I'm sorry, I don't know. My apologies if I haven't seen this, but I just wanted to... Bill Yee. My guess is, Bill, that you're concerned about... This is sort of the invasion of the body snatchers problem or question. I think that you are probably concerned about identity issues because you have a dark triad masking sociopath in your environment. And if that's the case, I'm happy to, is that why they rape the Joker? To piss people off? Yeah, so people felt a certain amount of affection. I mean, the Joker one was sadistic towards society, but because people of the wrong sort, right, apparently he turned into some extreme incel right-wing hero, so then the sadism turned from the Joker to the audience who likes the Joker. So, yeah. I'm just going to go back and see if Bill did give me any answer to this. I do not think that he did. And I probably won't do a super long show tonight because I am producing a lot of material at the moment. Don't forget, of course, that you can... If you have always wanted to have a conversation with me that doesn't go to the public eye, it's just private, and I can be much more assertive about what I say needs to be done, because I don't have to worry about being misinterpreted by the Gen Pop, but freedomain.com/call, and you can just select for a private call. The demand is too high. I have to raise the price. So if you get it in the next day or two, you get the lower price. Otherwise, you'll have to pay. Or if you want to, you can pay the higher price. Yes, I do plan to add Philosophers to the History of Philosophers series. You've been a man on fire recently. Thank you so much, Steph. Well, I appreciate that. I am always working to improve. People walked out on that movie. If you walk out in the first 30 minutes, you get a refund. I think that's why you have to sit through 20 minutes of ads. Oh, yeah, I can't stand the coming soon stuff. I just can't stand it. I think it's just like, if I want to watch the movie, don't give me spoilers. And they always seem to give you spoilers. It's like the coming soon for The Usual Suspects. It's like, that's the whole movie. So, yeah, I have to time it well, so I come in just at the end of the coming scenes. I remember as a kid, I guess my mom was dating someone, and I was jammed in some hotel room, and the TV was on, and I saw that the movie Buck Rogers with Joe Girard was coming to TV, and I was really excited, because I loved that movie when I was a kid. Buck Rogers... I was thinking of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. That was not a good movie, but although it was pretty well, or I think that one with the Buck Rogers with Joe Girard was a very cute and funny movie. I remember he's humming Chicago, that toddling town at the beginning. I even read the book too. Can you believe it? The book for the movie. Is the traditional Joker archetype a pariah turned sociopath? Somebody says, I found my private call to be amazing. Would recommend. Well, thank you. No, the Joker is like Harley Quinn. The Joker is not a character. The Joker is an anti-character. It doesn't require, it's a lazy character because it requires anti-consistency. He's crazy. He's wacky. He's this, he's that, you know. Was it the terminally cucked soy boy Mark Hamill played him in some animated series for a while? And it was also in Wing Commander 3. I'm embarrassed that I remember that, but I do. And yeah, the Joker is, it's for lazy writers. They can just stuff him full of all kinds of contradictions and just say, well, he's the Joker. It's complicated. And it's like, no, it's just chaos. And the Joker, well, I shouldn't say, there's one thing, and I talked about this. This is a show I did many, many years ago, and you can look it up, freedomain.com/podcasts or fdrpodcasts.com. I'll get you the title here. The Joker versus Raskolnikov. The Joker Yes, the show is 1177, all the way from 2008. An examination of moral theories of war and violence using Raskolnikov from Crime and Punishment and the Joker from The Dark Knight. It's a cozy 29 minutes. There's even a video. There's even a video. Let me just give you the link here so that you can watch this. You can watch this. It is a good thing. So the Joker, like the fool in the court or in King Lear, the Joker allows writers to touch on very important themes without being canceled, right? There's a great speech. It actually gave me goosebumps. I did what I do best. I took your little plan and I turned it on itself. Look what I did to this city with a few drums of gas and a couple of bullets, You know? You know what I've noticed? Nobody panics when things go according to plan, even if the plan is horrifying. If tomorrow I tell the press that, like, a gang banner will get gang banner. Sorry, fuck that up. Let me try it again. If tomorrow I tell the press that, like, a gang banger will get shot or a truckload of soldiers will be blown up, nobody panics because it's all part of the plan. But when I say that one little old mare will die, well, then everybody loses their minds. Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order and everything becomes chaos. And you know the thing about chaos? It's great. And now this is right on the edge, and the same thing is talked about in Raskolnikov, by Raskolnikov in Crime and Punishment, where he says, so Napoleon slaughters half of Europe and he's a hero. He gets, you know, statues and he's a great man of history. I kill one little old pawnbroker to liberate her money and I'm an evil guy, right? Right on the edge, right on the edge of that part, right on the edge of what is the plan. People will accept absolute murder and slaughter if it's part of the plan. If they're told it's part of the plan. But when you compare these things to morality, that's very, very different. That's very, very different. Nobody panics when things go according to plan, even if the plan is horrifying. I mean, that's COVID, right? Nobody fucking panics if it's according to the plan. If somebody in a white coat tells you to do something horrifying, as you know, the vast majority of people will torture and murder if they're told to do so, and they think it's part of the plan. This is the Milgram experiments, right? People will kill whoever the leaders point at if they're told it's part of the plan. I mean, everybody thinks this when they're a kid, right? So, if I'm told to kill someone by a mafia boss, I'm a murderer, and I'm going to fry. If I'm told to kill someone by a military boss, I'm a hero who gets a medal and a pension and a ticker tape parade. But it's still people telling other people to kill. The Kilrathi, oh, that's right. That was the bad guys in Wing Commander, right? It's a good game. I never played it with a joystick. I'm on a little bit of a video game nostalgia kick. I haven't done this in years, but a little bit of a video game nostalgia kick. If they say it, the plan. Yeah? Yeah. I mean, the left wing used to be anti-war and anti-multinational corruption, right? And then they became very pro-war and they were great with the corruption that happened under COVID, right? It's no principles. It's just power, right? They're told, well, these multinationals are bad, and then suddenly these multinationals are good, right? This is, we are always at war with East Asia. We've always been at war with East Asia. Oh, what? We're at war with Eurasia. We've always been at war with Eurasia, right? Part of the plan, we're told. You can be told the most insane things. There was a university professor recently, who said that men who don't vote for Kamala Harris at the University of Kansas, he says men who don't vote for Kamala Harris should be lined up and shot. Shot. Men who don't vote for Kamala Harris should be lined up and shot. Oh, he's been paid on it. He'd been placed on administrative leave, apparently, pending further investigation. Yes, because you really need to investigate that. I mean, when they tell you who they are, I don't know why people don't believe them. When they tell you who they are, I don't know why people don't believe them. Oh, but the left has never been murderous before. Like, you just got to go listen to my series on the French Revolution. It's available for donors. You want to join the community. It's a great community. You can join at fdrurl.com/locals. All right. So did you see the origin movie for Batman Beyond? An older, fatter Joker moaning in pain, holding his stomach, says it must have been the tongue sandwich I had for lunch. I knew I should have boiled it after ripping it out of that idiot mayor's mouth. Voiced by Mark Hamill. Sick. And that show is for kids. Sick minds behind things like that. And Mark Hamill. Okay. I don't know much about the guy other than he's barf-worthy on Twitter. He was in a movie I liked called Corvette Summer that I've never seen again. I just remember thinking it was kind of cool. But yeah, every time I see, you know, it's like Bruce Springsteen, right? Like, it's so staged. Oh, it's so Ralph-worthy. What is he worth? Hundreds of millions of dollars. But he's sitting there in a flannel shirt in a diner saying that, you know, he doesn't have much credibility, but here's what I think about the heartland. It's like, fuck you, man. You haven't been to the heartland except to force people to get vaccinated to listen to you croak instead of sing for fucking decades. The boss! Jesus, you screeched out some songs and then you talked about, hey, little Bill, is your daddy home? Did he come away? Did he run away and leave you all alone? Yeah, you're really on fire for that little girl whose daddy left her. You fucking creep. Jesus Christ. No wonder your guitarist can play a mobster. Fucking embarrassing. You know, it was so much nicer when you could just listen to people's music without listening to the puppet strings that cause them to say whatever verbal shit they say. I'm grateful that a lot of my favorite artists died young, so I didn't have to listen to them with someone jerking their puppet strings to make them say the most outlandish bullshit on social media.
Yeah.
You know, when people look up to you, you have a special responsibility to tell the truth. But of course, what happens when you become famous, which is why I'm literally I'm massively thrilled that I never became famous when I was younger. Because when I was younger, I wanted to. I mean, acting and all of that, right? Can you imagine if I'd had massive amounts of talent and skill and drive and hadn't been a free market guy, hadn't been a rationalist? Can you imagine what they would have done to me? I mean, look what they did to Justin Bieber. Holy shit. Oh my God, can you imagine? So the moment you become famous, you become useful to sociopaths. And they will torture you to program the population. Bruce Springsteen refers to Obama as a fellow traveler in his autobiography. Oh my God. Yeah, the moment that you become famous, you become a target for demons. I mean, there's a few people who can step out of it, like Kevin Sorbo and so on, right? But most people can't. And I don't think I would have been able to when I was younger. I think you'd be Edward Bernays if you were Evil Steph. I think I'd be worse than him, honestly. Evil Steph can do, could have done a rather large amount of damage. But then I would have had to deal with it while falling to the ground for 200 years. It's very likely these people were blackmailed into being evil. The blackmail was probably casting couch stuff and worse. Well, did I have that right? I think Alanis Morissette was talking in one of her biographies. Her autobiography, it's a documentary about how she was repeatedly raped as a child by record executives. Oh, and Jack the Ripper was finally revealed. Apparently DNA testing. It was a Jewish guy who was suspected at the time, but they finally, through DNA, seemed to have proven, whether it's true or not, I don't know. I haven't looked into it in great detail, but it looks like. They found him. That was a movie that had actually quite an influence on me called Time After Time. I should probably rewatch it. How Jack the Ripper and his hunter come forward in time, and Jack the Ripper looks at the news and says, "Wow, everyone's me now," or something like that. This is my world. Yeah, I mean, I think pretty much everyone who's famous is compromised. It's almost like they're allowed to become famous if they will do X, Y, and Z, right? Did you see who they think Satoshi is? I mean, this comes and goes, right? There have been lawsuits and stuff like that. Neil McDonough, yeah, he's a great actor. He's a great actor and plays a good bad guy. And yeah, he won't even kiss another girl, right, on screen. Yeah, fame used to be something admirable. It used to be something that you could aspire to and all of that, but I see fame as satanic now. I just see fame as satanic. That you, I don't think in the past you had to sell your soul to become famous, but you do now. You do now. I think musicians shouldn't talk about politics, just do music. What, do you think they're choosing? You think they're choosing? You think they just choose to talk about politics? It's like that absolute squint-eyed bastard Bono from U2 railing against problems in Ireland. Now there's some real fucking problems in Ireland. You can't find him with a microscope. Oh, has he talked at all about what's going on in South Africa? No. Fuck him. All right, a woman I dated for a short time reached out after 2 months. I'm having a hard time determining if she wants to authentically reconnect or if she's trying to string me along. People you can't read, don't interact with them. Don't interact with them. Please do not interact with people where you can't read them. You can't puzzle them out. You can't figure them out. You don't know what's going on. It's confusing. No. Life is challenging enough. You don't want to take up challenges of opaque-hearted people jerking you around from a distance. Recently re-listened to one of your talks about success anxiety. It is reasonable to have success anxiety. Those are some of the reasons. Look at fame now. Right. See, fame and deplatforming are the inverse of truth and virtue, right? I mean, the people in general, not everyone, but the people who are deplatformed because they don't have anything on them, they can't control them, and they can't bend, or they won't bend, right? Is art and music subjective, and is that part of the reason our culture is rotting? Because quality values are not transmitted to the next generation. Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. 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 Yeah, I mean, I think the last good movie, animated movie was Tangled. That was made by a Christian, I think, if I remember rightly. That's a very positive and healthy and helpful movie, right? With that adrenochrome theme. All right. Any other questions, comments, issues, challenges? Sorry, Bill, I'm not sure I got your answer there. I'm just going to scroll back and see. I wouldn't expect you to tip again just to get that updated, but of course, you can get a free call in, right? freedomain.com/call if you want to do that. Any other last tips? For me, I would very much appreciate them. If is it all possible? If at all possible, I would very much like to have the tip, not just the tip. The whole thing. Well, just a tip. Just a tip's fine. All right, let me just check last comments here. Look at that. We've got a few more people cooking over in Rumble. Oh, how delightful. When and how is disciplining children appropriate? I do not believe in disciplining children at all. Not even a tiny smidge of a little bit. You want to be honest with your children, right? So if your child is doing something that you find unpleasant or difficult, you can say to them, I find you unpleasant and difficult. But discipline? The problem with discipline is it externalizes the conscience. So think of all the rules that you have in your life that you didn't respect, right? So I remember going to see Tom Cochrane and Red Ryder many years ago. And this was at Ontario Place. And my friends and I were all dancing on the seats because everybody was up, right? And the Paul Blart Mall Cop security guard assholes were like, get off the seats, man. Sit down. You got it. It's like, no, forget it. I'm at a concert. I'm dancing my ass off in the seat. I'm not going to sit down and look at other people's asses dancing their ass off. So just think of the rules you don't respect. Think of the rules you don't respect. When I was a teenager, we used to play soccer and baseball all the time. And then they started wanting licenses and you got to get signed up. You got to pay for this and that. It's like, oh, fuck off. You know, like, fuck off. This is public space. Nobody's using it. And so we would just find early time in the morning. Or like, just, I didn't care. What can I get away with? What can I get away with? I don't respect these rules. So the problem with punishing children is you end up externalizing their conscience to you. And if they can dodge you, they think they can dodge their own conscience, right? All you want to do is really, really work at having the children understand the values of the virtues you're treating. You model the virtues, manifest the virtues, and get the children to understand those virtues, right? Otherwise, you know, like, if you get your kids to understand that lots of sugar isn't great for them, right? Then they can internalize that. You are the source of them not getting sugar, they'll just try and find ways to dodge and avoid you and get their sugar. So, yeah, book a call in soon. That's a very interesting question. I don't want to dodge the question. I don't find it particularly interesting, which doesn't mean anything. I mean, that's not any kind of real statement. I'm just telling you my particular thoughts. And I would rather get to the emotions behind it, because I think that's what is most important rather than answering the question. Pure theoreticals that can't happen in the real world are not too compelling to such a practical philosopher, so. People who can't read, that was great advice. We'll send you some gratuity through Free Domain. Time after time. 1979, so I was 13 years old, actually probably 12 when I saw it. Fame these days seems like a kind of seance of unearned attention or misallocated attention instead of the virtuous receiving accolades. The opposite is happening. Well, okay, so imagine this. Imagine what would happen if somebody wrote a mournful song about immigration changing their hometown. Right? Just imagine. Imagine if someone wrote a mournful country song or a mournful song of any kind about immigration changing the nature of their hometown. Just imagine. Everybody would lose their minds. And I know a lot of people are feeling it, but nobody can do anything about it. Nobody will write about it. There will be no art that will be allowed. And that person would probably be doxxed and hunted down like a dog. Imagine if somebody wrote a song about how the national debt was killing everybody's opportunity, right? Any chance at all there's a message in Joker 2? This is the first time I'm hearing of the rape. Well, I don't know. I doubt I'll see it, so. Besides the singer-songwriter being too involved in politics, is most of the music and art we see now in modern culture too sentimental? No, but it's all manipulative. It's all for a purpose. It's all for a purpose. I guess Sabrina Carpenter's old song Thumbs did talk about the bankers. I guess it's as close to pop, but then she got completely co-opted and turned into a breathy-voiced twerking stripper in her shows. Hypersexuality, and because she's promoting hypersexuality, hyper-attractiveness in the same way that Taylor Swift is, she's functionally not going to be allowed to have kids. So, very sad. They would probably be slandered, you think? I think it would be it would be insane. And what would happen? Because, you know, there are places I remember. There's lots of songs about nostalgia and how things change and so on, right? So imagine somebody. Yeah, imagine somebody writing a mournful song about how their hometown had changed under immigration. You're not allowed to miss what was. Unburdened by what was. It's a pure Marxist phrase. I love you, Steph. Thank you. Thank you. Any other last tips, comments, questions, issues, challenges, problems? You can, of course, always send me a message anytime you like. host@freedomain.com. host@freedomain.com. And of course, if you're part of the locals community, you're part of the Subscribestar community, which is subscribestar.com/freedomain. I'm constantly asking for questions. You can, of course, find me on Facebook. If you go to freedomain.com/connect, you can find me on tons of different social media places and so on. I would appreciate that to almost no end whatsoever. All right. Well, thanks everybody for a gorgeous, lovely evening. Have yourself a beautiful time. We'll talk to you Friday night. And again, don't forget Sunday, 11 in the a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I look forward to your tips for those who are offering me something later. I thank you. If you're listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate. You don't have to be here to tip as well. All right. Lots of love, everyone. Take care. Good night.